The Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics. Every 2 years, every 4 years, it's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. This podcast is going to go into the state of the struggle. What is the state of our struggle? What are our objectives? What are we doing? And I'm going to talk about some new phrases, some new terminology that applies to what is going on, to things that I've alluded to before, but now I'm going to talk about directly since you're already doing them. But to do that, I'm going to talk about a story. It's an interesting story. It's a true story. All over North America, in North America, I'm talking about Canada and the United States. If you're in the university system or if you've been in the university system, you should know one thing, that the university system itself, the classes taught, the way they're designed, the black studies, the African and America studies they have, the feminist studies, all the different stuff. If you go to law school, the human rights law, the equality stuff, all these different laws taught in law school, the different type of legal professions that have come out, everything in the college campus is basically communism or influenced by communism. And I'm not just talking social Marxism. I'm talking full-blown Marxist-Leninism. Gay rights, that's all Marxist-Leninist. This is all, they go into, the conservatives always like to go into the Frankfurt School and social Marxism, and that's relevant. But by and large, what you see on college campuses is by and large just communist. You can just call it communism. If you're on college campuses today, there's so much communism, you don't even know it's communism. Equality, all this stuff is Marxist-Leninist terminology. And it's an interesting story in North America, because in North America, it doesn't matter whether you're in an American campus or a Canadian campus, and I have a lot of college white rabbits in college listening to me. It doesn't matter if you're in McGill University or University of Tennessee. It's the same thing. But there's an interesting thing that happened. In the 50s, especially in the 60s, you know, the hippie generation, and early 70s, is the conservatives on college campuses pretty much won every single debate against the communists. Yeah, communism was a big thing. Vietnam War, you know, the conservatives brought out their phrase better dead than red, and the communists flipped it around better red than dead, and they had all these slogans, and better red than dead flew better than better dead than red. I mean, the conservatives just couldn't get anything going, but they won every debate. So if you're walking on a college campus, I don't care where you're at, a conservative there most likely won every single debate against this communist opponent, against this liberal opponent. Liberalism is just communism light, and these days it's hard to differentiate. It's just communism. You can call social Marxism, that's a variation, and that came in and that influenced all kinds of different social think tanks and psychology department and everything else. But by and large, most of this terminology that you're getting on the college campus is just Marxist-Leninist. So how could the conservatives win all the debates? I don't care if you're a McGill University up in Canada, some prestigious university like Yale. The conservatives would have won every single debate against the communists. This is a fact. But every single university to this day is by and large communist. The terminology is communist. There's a huge communist influence. Why is that? How can you lose debates but win the universities? How can that something like that happen? And it comes down to something called imposing terminology. See, if someone can impose terminology, they get to impose ideology. Political warfare, subversive activities, demoralization, all this stuff starts with imposing terminology. And if you impose terminology, you impose ideology. You can impose terminology on the college campuses, lose every single debate, and still get to impose ideology. And that's what you saw. Now, I know that's a simplistic explanation, but I'm simplifying it for a reason. You can have all the little clever Jews working for you that you want, but if you can't impose terminology, you can't impose ideology. And they impose terminology. All the terminology on college campuses is right out of communism. Equality, the concept of equality, social justice, human, this is all communism, human rights. If you go to law school and you got human rights law at heart, that's all communist stuff. This is right out of Marxist-Leninist. Go talk to the communists. I'm talking, go to Soviet Union, talk to old communists, and they'll tell you that. It's plain as day. It's so far gone, they don't even know what they are. But they impose terminology. You know, you got the conservatives winning the debate, and they're out there, and the average student was saying, yeah, dude, you won that debate, man, but, you know, better red than dead, man. Yeah, watch some Cheech and Chong. Better red than dead. Yeah, better red than dead. Yeah, they were saying little crazy things like that. Little memes. Some of it was outright stupid and Orwellian. But they imposed terminology. They imposed terminology the old-fashioned way. That broken record strategy. They had a consistent message and they were on it night and day all the time. Conservatives every once in a while got one together, but every time they got one together, it got flipped upside down. Communists were way better at this than the conservatives. Conservatives were good at winning debates, but nothing in North America, and I'm talking nothing at the university level, is conservative, even if they say they are. Yeah, there are no paleo conservative universities. There are no white universities, and this is by and large a white landmass still. It's kind of funny. But they imposed terminology. They lost every single debate, but they imposed terminology. If you impose terminology, you impose ideology. It's kind of basic. In political warfare, by the way, in practical politics, always start with non-voting politics. It's what you say when you open up your mouth. Conventional politics, it always consists of practical politics, being on message, having a message, being able to impose terminology. If you see a political candidate, I don't care if it's Obama or Abraham Lincoln, it could be back in ancient Rome or Greece. If someone's imposing their terminology, they're going to win the election most likely. In fact, I don't know of a case where they haven't, and get to impose ideology. Lincoln imposed terminology, he imposed ideology. Impose is what it means. It's imposing. It's an aggressive act. Politics is aggressive. Getting out there talking, being on a message, is pretty aggressive stuff for most people. Most people aren't cut out for it. But the communists did a pretty good job. All the different variations. They have some theorists, and their theorists maybe won a few rounds of a debate or would lose, but that doesn't matter. They're just theorists. They play that broken record strategy. They'd say the same thing over and over again. Better red than dead, dude. Better red than dead. Better red than dead, dude. Better red than dead. They impose terminology, human rights, equality, all this commie terminology, and because they impose their terminology, racism and all that other type of stuff, they got to impose ideology. That's how that works. So if you're wondering how you could lose every win every single debate but lose everything under the sun, it comes down to imposing terminology. And conservatives, well, they don't have a terminology. Their terminology is always the enemy's terminology, or it has been for a long time, because the enemy hijacked their terminology. You know, they spent $500 billion loading words like Nazi, loading words, I mean, just totally loading language. Totally loading words like racism. Totally loading words like anti. I mean, they spent a fortune on just a handful of key words, and I talked about this in the last Chuck Roy interview. You can listen to it. You can also listen to it in the last 30 minutes on my last podcast. But this is important, imposing terminology. Because if you can't impose terminology, you can't subvert anything. You can't take over the university system. If we can't impose terminology, we can't take it back. It's key art of subversion. I want to make this point. This point is right in front of everyone's face. Now, the neoconservatives are a famous little group in America. They're a famous little group because they hijacked the Republican Party. They didn't fire any bullets. There were no bullets fired on college campuses either. But they hijacked the Republican Party by demoralizing it. And the first act of demoralization is subversion, and subversion always consists of attempting to impose your terminology. What's funny about the neocons is they imposed terminology, and as a broken record strategy, anyone that opposed them was an anti-Semite, racist, you know, the whole nine yards. But they basically not only imposed their terminology, they brought crisis over this, crisis after crisis, and destabilized things. And crisis is just that. The idea of the bringer crisis is to change power. They took everything under the sun just by imposing their terminology and invoking crisis over imposing their terminology. They call someone a name, create a big stir over it, and then there would be a change of power. That person would get fired. They did this like night and day. They imposed terminology because they imposed terminology. They imposed ideology. And I know it seems juvenile. It does. The basics sometimes do. And what they did, in my opinion, is, well, is immoral. It's immoral, but it's not illegal. It's not illegal. And in the next little bit, I'm going to go into definitions of subversion. Some stuff right in front of your face. What's going on now? What we are doing? What's important to understand? Because if you can impose terminology, you can impose ideology. It's the laws of nature almost. Subversion 101, and to take anything back, we have to impose terminology. And I'll be back with you, and I'm going to explain subversion, what it is, what it isn't, what we're doing, the state of the struggle. Before I go into subversion and how this is relevant to what we are doing, and into some things I pointed out before and go a little deeper, I just wanted to say by impose, I am talking to, I'm talking about the verb, to dictate, to set. That's what I mean by impose, I-M-P-O-S-E. And we're talking about the verb. And when I talk about terminology, I'm talking about terms that we own, and we own the specific context. That's what terminology means. So when you say anti-racism is anti-white is not only our word, it will only ever be used historically in our context. That's kind of a big deal. So when we're talking about impose, I'm talking about dictate terminology and dictating ideology. And I'm doing that for foreign listeners, because foreign listeners sometimes email me with simple questions. And I'm trying to go in a little bit, non-English listeners, people that don't use English as a native language. And heavens knows I talk a little fast. I talk a little fast. And this probably isn't the most ideal podcast for a non-native English speaker. And some would say not even for a native English speaker, but I'm just trying to do that for them, trying to give them an idea of what I mean by impose. That's the verb, I-M-P-O-S-E, and it means dictate. And dictate means just that, lay down with power and authority here. And you can look up dictate. But it's important for me to do that for the foreign listeners, because I'll get emails, and I don't know if they're legitimate emails sometimes or if they have legitimate questions, and sometimes I'm a little aggressive with that, because we have this problem with these new little rabbits I'm including in this podcast called the troll rabbits. But that's what I mean by impose, dictate terminology, dictate ideology. You can interchange impose with dictate. But that is a key point in subversion. For any type of subversive element in our particular struggle to be effective, we have to impose or dictate terminology. We have to have a terminology. Does this go into a consistent message? Well, yes. This all revolves around a consistent message. It starts with a sound. It starts with a vibration. But subversion is, by and large, one of the most misunderstood things on the planet. Many people think subversion is blowing something up. Subversion is doing something illegal. Subversion is never doing anything illegal at all. It's something that happens right in front of the world, right in front of everyone's face, and it is never an illegal act. An illegal act is never considered a subversive act. The only people that consider illegal acts a subversive act is everybody in cell block 6. Yeah, they don't get it because they're already in jail. But subversion is a funny thing in a free society because there's nothing legally you can do to stop it. That's the key point here. Subversion, there's nothing legally you can do to stop it. We are considered subversive. White Rabbit Radio, Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar is considered subversive for one reason only. We are targeting something for destruction. And I use that word in every context, destruction. We're trying to destroy White Rabbit Genocide or the political correct system that puts it in practice. We are trying to destroy it. We are targeting it for destruction. And when you target something for destruction, a system, a government, or a program like White Rabbit Genocide or a politically correct system that allows it, you are immediately considered subversive. But subversive activities are always happen right in front of your face. They're considered overt, O-V-E-R-T. They happen right in front of the world. And they're never illegal. Never illegal. And that is one of the conundrums of a free state that I'll get to in a minute. But we are considered subversive. It's nothing bad. We're not doing anything immoral. We're trying to take something back. To take something back that was basically taken from you. You know, this whole entire thing, let's say in America, is 180 degrees upside down. Let's say at the university level or at the government level, it's 180 degrees upside down. To take it right side up, we got to go through the same steps of subversion. We have to dictate terminology. Once you dictate terminology, you get to dictate ideology. That's how those things happen. A lot of times a crisis evolves over this terminology you're dictating. It can happen within groups. It can happen outside of groups into a greater society. And it's a very interesting point. And so to answer the question directly, what is going on when someone's trying to deny that they're anti-white? What's going on at the basic level, whether it be in forums or whether it be in Norway or whether it be in Iceland or whether it be in Germany in some areas, all over the white world, whether it be in Ohio, whether it be in Texas or California, what's happening is that you're starting to dictate or impose terminology. That's a big deal. That's when someone's saying, I'm not anti-white, it's kind of like maybe you remember the neocons. Neocons in America would accuse someone of being anti-Semitic, and then they would come out and try to say they were anti-Semitic. You've never really seen that work. Why? They own that word. They impose terminology. They dictated it. And it's their word in their context, for better or worse. Now, we're not doing anything immoral. We're simply pointing out the obvious, that anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. We're pointing out an objective truth, and it is totally objective. It is. What we're doing is totally moral, but it's considered subversive. It's a big, big deal. To a lot of parties on this third rock from the sun, and you've gotten a lot of attention. We've gotten a lot of attention. I say you because I'm not out on every forum everywhere all across the white world, but you are now. You are, and you're starting to dictate terminology pretty boldly at a local level. You know, that's what's happening. I was reading a forum in Canada where someone's trying to say the anti-white was trying to say that they're not anti-white. There's a key podcast on the front page of my website. It's very recent, but it's a must listen. It's a must listen. And you're going to understand what you're listening to. It's called Adelheim and Creator Part 6 under Debate Tactics on the front page, March 22nd, 2011 entry. And if you go to the tag, under tag, you're going to see debate tactics. You can hit that, and you're going to go to that. And number 6, Adelheim and Creator. It's a Norwegian, Adelheim, talking to Creator, who is in Iceland. And Creator's become somewhat a little celebrity in Iceland. What does he do? He plays that broken record strategy nonstop. And it is a failsafe. The broken record strategy in this type of society has never once been... If you have the right message at the right time, it's over with almost. It really can be that simple. It's just a matter of playing the broken records. And one of the key jobs for me to do in the first act was to find an audience that would play a broken record. This audience, of course, my audience is aggressive. My website, the images, the particular images I use, even the facial expressions are all quite aggressive. We are fighting white rabbit genocide. Yeah, you're not going to do that with Alice in Wonderland fluffy white rabbits. They want something aggressive. They want an aggressive tone. They won't listen to anything else. They want something to do today. I give them something to do today. But, of course, we're not dropping bombs. We're dropping mantras. We're targeting a system for destruction. We're targeting this politically correct system for destruction. We're not doing it with bombs. We're doing it with sound. We're doing it with a sound, with a vibration. It's different, but yet destruction is destruction, as long as it's out of our way. So be it. If we can do this legally, great, fantastic. But subversion is by and large misunderstood. Some people think that the most critical act is to find your subversive accomplices. For me to find those white rabbits who are ready to say the one key phrase, down with pink rabbits. Many believe that was the key for Bob to find, Bob's assistant actually is the one that asked me to do it, but for me to find you, once I find you, and you start playing the broken record and see how this stuff works, you're not going to stop. Even if I fall off the face of the earth, even if bugs and the web's internet gets shut down, it doesn't matter. We found you. I found you. Whatever. The message found you. You like this game, this broken record strategy. But at a certain point of this game, we have to have an objective criteria for success. The first objective criteria is I have to be subverting something. What am I trying to subvert? Well, if you come to the website, you're going to see, and I pointed out this before, that if you look up Follow the White Rabbit on Google, there's like 2 million different searches. I'm at number 2. I didn't do that. You did that. Follow the White Rabbit is at number 2. If you look up Horus the Avenger, I own that. I'm the pre-dynastic Egyptian god now, which is the way it should be, isn't it? Yes, we took back our own mythology. But so when you get into Horus the Avenger's Follow the White Rabbit, we're subverting very common things. One way more common than the other. You know, Horus Avenger probably only has a couple hundred thousand searches, but Follow the White Rabbit is a very common phrase in the English language. We subverted it. Well, you did it. I didn't, but I hit my target audience. It's kind of obvious. If you're number 2 on the Google search list or on the search list, you're in number 2 for a very common popular phrase. You subverted it. But that is very overt. Many people, that is the type of thing that gives our enemy fits because that's the type of thing they did at the college level. If you go back to the college level, what they were doing is subversive things. They weren't doing anything illegal. They were doing very irritating things. And there's nothing more irritating than the broken record strategy. The broken record strategy, repeating the same thing over and over again, is the most irritating thing on earth. It is. It's irritating. It's irritating because it causes a lot of, you're dictating terminology. You're imposing your terminology. And that is an aggressive act. Subversion is always an aggressive act. It's always described as an aggressive act targeting some particular system, power, authority for destruction. And it's an aggressive act. It's just not illegal. The type of stuff that parties will pay big money for are never illegal because you can go to jail. You can only do an illegal act once. You know, you can keep playing the broken record over and over again, but at a certain point in time, we're going to have to start dictating terminology. And if you find your target audience, if you have your broken record, if your broken record is playing correctly, if everything's going as planned, it can happen very, very quickly, and that's what we've seen. In that particular Adelheim and Creator, you're going to get an idea of what's going on in Norway and Iceland. Someone's dictating terminology. If you go to any of these forums, you're going to see anti-whites trying to describe that they're not anti-whites. Pretty difficult to do. Yeah, we're going to target white countries and only white countries for immigration, non-white immigration. We're going to target white communities and only white communities for forced integration. If you read about Marin County, California, and all these different things going on in Europe, they're targeting it for forced integration. This is just because they're white. This is in only white countries, in all white countries. And then, of course, they're trying to push interracial marriages down our throats in white countries and only white countries. It's objective. I've got certain blogs on my website you can go visit, and you can see it's totally objective. Anti-white media. This one that shows all the different anti-white medias and that type of thing. But this is pretty objective. And then, of course, they come back with the timepiece that the Time article that the future of the Western world is, of course, a brown future. And then they wonder why we call them anti-white, and they wonder why this is considered genocide. You can't argue against it. It's kind of pervasive at a certain point in time when they're targeting whole communities just because they're white for forced integration. You know, they like to take everything in a vacuum. Like there's one magic Mexican jumping across the border who goes to the hospital and goes back home, or rakes a yard and goes back home. Or there's one magic Muslim that happens to walk into Europe and take some blonde bride back to Kumbaya in the middle of Middle East or wherever. Whatever brown country he came from, it ain't working that way. They like to pretend that, but it isn't. But again, you have integration, you have immigration, integration, and this is all forced down our throats. There's no voting on it. Then, of course, there's interracial marriage forced down everyone's throats. And then, of course, they promote a brown future in only white countries. Well, but the, you know, that doesn't make us anti-white, and that doesn't make us genocidal. Sure. Sure. You know, they like to say there's no such thing as white people. I always say, well, of course there's no such thing as white children to you. In your vision of the future, you killed them all. And it's simply true. It's true. But what I'm telling you is you're arguing a one-way street. It's like the conservative, and maybe you've seen this, Trent Lott was a famous senator in America. Still is, I guess. And he was accused of being racist over some nonsense. I can't even remember the nonsense. And he cowed down in front of the cameras. And all of us just, you get that funny feeling in the stomach if you're a white rabbit. You get that horrible feeling like this idiot's going to say it. I'm not a racist, but that doesn't work. It doesn't work. So saying I'm not an anti-white, but this, but that, it isn't going to work. We own the terminology. Our enemy owns the terminology racist. There's no doubt about it. There's no dancing around it. In your opinion, I'm racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. We have something to say. You got to. And we come back not only with something to say, we come back with our own terminology, which we own. So 500 years from now, there'll be some little white rabbit playing on the playground. He'll accuse one of his other little white rabbits of having anti-white tendencies just because his granddaddy prosecuted a Klansman back in the 1950s in America. And that's the way it should be. It's positive peer pressure. But we own these terms. I say we, all white rabbits do. Because believe it or not, a lot of times when you're dictating terminology, the in-group would be the other dissidents, can really start feeling it. They can really start feeling it. Sometimes it's confusion, sometimes a little bit of anger because it's not their particular pet issue, or they don't understand it, or they don't fully cotton to what we're doing, or they look at the mantras and say, all right, what is this simplistic nonsense? And they look at it that way. What is this broken record strategy? You know, they treat it like the next election cycle, and in the election cycles, you have everyone shouting, oh, yes, we can. It's irritating as hell. The broken record strategy is the most irritating thing on earth. And so the in-group can also start freaking out over it, because it is imposing. I mean, you are dictating term, and they feel it just like anyone else. But what I would say to the dissidents, don't worry about it if it's not your thing, and if you can just defend yourself, or instead of using anti, use anti-white, that's cool. That's cool. It's very difficult to go from your own particular language and your own particular views on the struggle to trying to use someone else's terminology and someone else's consistent message that comes alive 20 years after you've been in the struggle, or even 10 years. But what I will tell you is that when the communists and many of the communist theorists did not like a lot of slogans on Americans' campuses, they weren't highbrow enough for them. But none of those communist theorists ever won any debates, which is kind of funny. But all those communist theorists, whether it be Frankfurt School, whatever nonsense you want to get into, all of them benefited from that broken record strategy. They all benefited from it. So everyone white, will benefit from this particular consistent message as it starts dictating terminology. I mean, all the racial groups, paleoconservatives, will all benefit from it, and that's totally fine. I don't have to thank us, I don't have to thank Bob, but that's the way it works. It's kind of like, you know, you're a communist on the college campuses, you benefited from that broken record strategy. You didn't necessarily do anything, but sit there with your communist theorizing, which is alright. That's what you're there. You're there Marxist theorist or whatever. Or you're teaching a Marxist theory of history or whatever they're teaching these days. Or the diversity studies. They all benefited from that. They didn't necessarily involved in it. They didn't necessarily even like it because it wasn't highbrow enough for them. highbrow being not enough intellectual enough, and there's nothing intellectual about the broken record strategy. But yet there is when you get into subversive activity. It can be considered somewhat intellectual. It takes somewhat creativity to do, especially coming up with this stuff. But they will all benefit regardless. So I don't really worry about the in-group long term, but in the short term, it can cause some issues. Like, wait a minute, are they expecting me to say this? I don't want to say this, you know, and all this other kind of stuff. That's why, you know, old Bob spent quite a while going around the normal, building up a whole new group of dissidents from Stormfront, from what have you, prior to 2005 and Why Johnny Can't Think. That book came out, and that's what he was promoting. Then after that, we started promoting the mantra mostly online, because that's the only venue open up to. It's like the new way to hand out flyers. They're posted on forums, posted online, but, you know, really, I don't think he really considered any of the dissidents would actually adopt it simply because you have to form a new group. It's very difficult to put dissidents on a consistent message. They got to see the soapbox. They got to see how things work, and then they adopt what they want to adopt, what's better for their message. And that's fine. It's totally fine. But it is imposing. You are starting to dictate terminology to the local level. Doesn't matter if it's in San Francisco or Norway or Iceland. You're starting to get that wonderful phrase I wanted to hear. I'm not an anti-white, but that will never work. It will never work. But one thing I'll point out to you, we got to this far not by trying to debate, but by making our point over and over again. A broken record strategy has nothing to do with debating. Bob and his group of anti-communists that he was involved in would stand up at so-called debates, and they would just say the same thing over and over again, ask the same questions. If these countries are so wonderful, why do they have guards at the borders to keep people in? They would keep saying the same thing over and over again. Now, it is a debate. You'll win it every... many of the listeners are winning debates hand down, but they're debating a one-way street. How can you debate you're not anti-white? How can you debate this isn't a genocide? Anyone can look at the law. I mean, when they're force integrating Tibet with the Chinese, it's genocide. When they're force integrating Marin County or wherever they're force integrating in California and some places in Norway, big cities in Norway or even Germany or wherever, somehow it's not genocide, it's not mentioned. So it's an anti-white double standard that can be pointed to again and again. But this thing all revolves around our terminology, things like anti-white, which is the big one. And anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Undermining their terminology, but imposing ours, dictating terminology. But if you dictate terminology, you get to dictate ideology. What's important to know about our ideology is the most feared ideology on the planet. No white country is practicing our ideology, and our ideology is absolutely terrifying. It's white and normal. It's terrifying. But Horace, how can it be white and normal? We have all these different groups. Well, having all those different groups is white and normal. That's how white societies operate. They're individualists. That's the way it works. It's white and normal. Yeah, it's white and normal, the most terrifying thing to hit the planet. a world I wish I grew up in. Something white and normal. It's funny stuff. But that terminology, that ideology, I'm sure everyone can agree on. White and normal, at least all the groups that would listen to this podcast, with the exception of the enemy. But by and large, subversion is always a legitimate legal act, and in this case, it's a moral act, because it's the only thing we can legally do to take power back. At the best way to do it is at the local level. Now, I would take it top down. You know, if someone gets on Fox News, I know old Bob was on Fox News once, and no, they won't release footage of that. But if he could get on Fox News and do the mantra all day long, that'd be wonderful. It'd be wonderful, but you gotta take the road given to you. You know, if the only road given to you is at the local level and every area code, which is eventually what you gotta do anyways, well, you can go from the bottom up, but this has happened very, very quickly. Many groups have been caught off guard by surprise, and I'm not talking about groups within, let's say, paleoconservative white nationalism or white normal groups, all the white normal groups. I wouldn't necessarily put them in the mix. Many of them are just trying to figure out what the hell we're doing. But what the hell what all we're up to and how this thing has worked so fast. But many of our enemies groups have really been taken off guard by this. They've been given no warning. Their masters, didn't return the phone calls. Everything's been left vacant. And now, of course, they're sitting basically getting pounded with this all the time. Pounded with this. And you know someone's being pounded with it, whether it be Trent Lott or whether it be the conservative where the neocons accuse them of being anti-Semitic, or whether it be your local anti-white, which you just have underneath it. Have by the throat every day yelling he's anti-white, is when they start trying to get out of it. I'm not anti-white, but I'm not anti-Semitic, but I'm not a racist, but ain't gonna work. It ain't ever gonna work. Someone's dictating terminology on you. Someone's imposed terminology, and that's what it is. It's an aggressive act. It is imposed. I mean, and that's where the challenge comes in. But that is all considered subversive. It's not illegal. What we're doing is the highest form of morality in the universe, destroying something evil. And what could be more evil than something that sits and tries to destroy beautiful little white rabbits? Totally evil. Yeah, so I say down with pink rabbits, but you need to know what you're doing and why there's so many characters that are going to be coming out of the woodwork, and generally in this case as trolls. It would have been a lot worse. What they should have done is they should have done what they're trying to do, some of the different tactics they're trying to do well over a year ago. But they just didn't see it. They didn't see it coming. They couldn't see it. Their masters that did see it pretty much ran out on them. You know, pink rabbits are traitors. They'll sell out their own. They made a totally different decision a year, probably year and a half ago, or whenever it was. I noticed it on this podcast. It was either late in 2009, beginning of 2010. They decided what they're doing with this, whatever this is, this in regards to what we're accusing them of, genocide. You know, they're obviously going to war, World War III. And then trying to do the big bamboozle and get their new world order, but they've totally left these little anti-white groups blowing in the wind. These little pink rabbits blowing in the wind, and that can lead to a lot of fear. You're also dealing with a demoralized society, and I'm going to go over that again and tell you how that's working for us, because that's working for you, not against you anymore. That will not be working against you in the particular struggle we're in anymore. Once you get past dictating terminology, imposing terminology, demoralized society will actually work for you, not against you. It's kind of a fascinating thing we're seeing. And I'm going to go into that next, but it's important to understand what you're doing. It's moral. It's the highest form of morality. To take anything back that's been subverted, well, you got to follow the same pathway. You got to dictate terminology, and you got to have a terminology. Without a terminology, you can't dictate terminology. If someone says, Horace, I need you to subvert this, I can say, well, where's your message? What do you want me to do? What's your objective? You got to have a terminology to dictate terminology, to impose terminology. If you don't have that, you can't get anywhere. You can't get anywhere with just debate. I mean, it's pretty profound. Every single college, university in North America, you have conservatives who won debates against communists. Outright debates. But they lost every single university. It's profound. Now, most of you guys are winning debates, so I'm not saying that isn't important. By all means, do both, especially if you're in front of an audience. But just don't sit there, debate, and argue with anti-whites unless it's in front of an audience, whether it be on an internet forum or in front of an audience. I mean, just make your point. Don't waste your time. They like us wasting our time. We've got this far by not wasting time. We got this far by making our point and getting out message and getting on message. Or, as I say, play that broken record. Because a broken record doesn't lose in this type of society. It just doesn't, for better or worse. You know, it's a strategy so subversive and so violent that you can lose debate after debate across college campuses and still end up owning outright every university. That's pretty profound. It's pretty profound. So, you know, next time someone says a broken record doesn't work, it works. It's quite irritating. It is irritating. I'll be the first to tell you that. Better red than dead, dude. Better red than dead. Very irritating stuff. Oh, yes, we can, and all that Obama's very irritating. In your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying it because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-. That's irritating stuff. If you're the enemy. It's music to my ears, especially when they start trying to tell us how they're not anti-white, because they're going to have a very difficult time doing it. Since it's immigration, integration, intermarriage, and brown futures for only white rabbit holes, and all white rabbit holes, you're going to have a very difficult time explaining your way out of that one. Our enemy knows that at the top. The little pink rabbits in all over the white world are finding that out. It's very difficult to argue a one-way street. It's very difficult for a conservative who doesn't like neocons to argue against himself being an anti-Semite. Why, they own the terminology. They own it. They own the context. So have some fun with it. By all means, win debates. But my point is not to have you not win debates. The point is to understand why you're being successful. And that this is a big, big deal. Because any group that has ever imposed or dictated terminology will get to dictate ideology. That's the laws of nature. That's the way it works. And there's a great deal of fear because we're accusing people of illegal activity. Big time illegal activity. In fact, in the highest level. International law, which in spite of what they say that white children don't count under it, they do. They're called Indo-European. They do. You know, Saddam Hussein tried to say the Kurds didn't count. I assure you they did. You don't believe me? Find them and ask them. It always works that way. The universe always catches up to pink rabbits. They just don't like thinking about the future prospects of the universe catching up with them. But in the next phase, I'm going to go into demoralization. I'm going to go into how you're seeing that working for you and how that'll be working for you more and more, which is it's a great piece of news, I guess, I have for you. We're going to talk about demoralization and some things you need to understand regarding analysis of demoralization, why it's important to understand this process. One of the key factors in understanding where you're at in anything, in any type of endeavor like this, is where the society is at in a general, especially since it's underwent some type of subversive activity. When I talked earlier, way many podcasts ago, about demoralization or active measures, demoralization is a massive subversive effort that happens over the course of a generation. That's to bring a society to a point where, despite an abundance of true information, it can no longer defend itself against an enemy. One of the key proponents of this type of subversive activity and demoralization is to totally neutralize them against an enemy. And I'll call your attention to a particular old recording on this particular website, Victory Forever, I'm going to put up. I'm going to attach it to my Twitter. You can listen to an old George Lincoln Rockwell speech. It's a Brown University speech in 1966, part one and part two. I'll post the page. You can go down there and listen to his Brown University speech. These are pretty bright white rabbits. This is back in 1966, and George Lincoln Rockwell will sound like a normal conservative talking about communism and Jewish involvement in communism. You're dealing with a society that has been totally neutralized after World War II, in regards to the Jews at least. A lot of that has to do with the dog faces of World War II. They were told to obey orders, and they did. There's a lot of different programming that went on with that. And then immediately, of course, they had the GI Bill and going into university setting. You have also a long-term effort that had been in place to neutralize America against any concept of race. And that really came to fruition after World War II. You also have a massive subversive activity happening by communism on the actual college campuses. And most of the students at Brown University are totally unaware of it. But this is the type of thing you'll see. True information will mean nothing to them. They are already in trouble, and they don't even realize it. You know, the spider has spun its web, and now it's getting ready to inject its deep venom. And that's what has happened in places like America. America is so far gone that it's starting to come back around with the new media. You have a new media. After 15 to 20 years of any new media, you totally start neutralizing any demoralization, and everything starts falling by the wayside. But once this activity is in place, once this massive subversive activity is in place, and demoralization would be the biggest subversion known to the planet, simply because it targets a whole entire region or a society or a race, or in this case, it targeted a whole entire race, didn't it? Yes, indigenous white rabbits of Europe. But the key to understanding where you're at right now is the key to understanding that, because the communists weren't really interested in winning debates. They didn't care about it. They didn't care about George Lincoln Rockwell stepping up giving facts, did they? They didn't care about that. Sure, they might have fought him in the street, they might have done some things, but that didn't win anything. It didn't lose anything. Better red than dead, dude. Better red than dead. You're in a society that no longer, it has totally been neutralized against an enemy. They're ready to inject that deep venom that was happening right at that time. Right at that time on college campuses, the radicals of the late 60s, the Vietnam era, and all that garbage. And once that stuff's in place, it goes on until you have a new media or until someone else takes over. We got lucky. We got a new media to neutralize it. But you're still dealing with the after effects of that. One of the interesting things, when you're dealing with a deeply demoralized society, and no one's ever seen anything at the state we're in. The reason the enemy had one strategic objective, Global communism, well, okay. Neutralizing, White Rabbit genocide, well, that's true. That's true. That's always their strategic objective, but that's just part and parcel to a new world order. Their new world order always involves our White Rabbit genocide. It does. I don't know why. They're not really picky, depending on where you're at in their hierarchy, in my opinion, they're not all that picky what they blend us with. We have a very strange enemy, but you have to know their strategic objectives. Right now, there's been media reports about a cow that they're producing. This cow produces human milk. That's not normal stuff we do. You know, there's a video I'm going to be talking about in the next couple podcasts with Katy Perry. Katy Perry is a big pop singer nowadays, and there's a video, and it has extraterrestrial, basically alien interracial sex and all kinds of weird stuff all down one, and chimerical sex all in one bandwagon. We're dealing with a very strange enemy the whole way around. But you have to know what your enemy's strategic objective is. Their objective is a new world order. I don't really care how they go about it. They can go this way or that way. And so at this time, they were neutralizing, especially in America, a host so that they could bring about their new world order. They were tearing down Western civilization. And in this case, the little Jew rabbits were pretty much the workhorses. Just like if you're on a blog and someone's arguing on Stormfront, there's a handful of them that are white, but there's a lot of Jews out there too. You know, Team Pink Rabbit, they're the little workhorses, in my opinion. But they certainly were on college campuses, the radicals of the 60s. You can't talk about it once you start talking about Jewish involvement. But their whole entire modus operandi, their whole entire reason for doing all this is not just to take over America. That's just part of the puzzle. That's the New World Order. That's what they want. That's what they're going for. But they don't have that yet. But right now, the key is to understanding where you're at right now. Where we're at right now is you have a demoralized Western civilization that's coming out because you've had a new media for 15 to 20 years, the Internet. Internet is very radical. Anytime you see any type of new media, like a printing press or anything like that, all active measures, any type of subversive activities regarding anything that broad, regarding a whole society, is going to come to complete halt. You know, you bring out printing presses and you got all these little independent newspapers starting, well, you can't really control information the same way. Everything's going to start being neutralized. New ideals are going to be expressed. There's also another factor here. So you have a certain percentage that are waking up and have woken up. That's why Stormfront exists. That's why White News Now exists. That's why white nationalists or paleoconservative media is so huge online. Racial media is huge online. The only thing bigger is alternative news and research, and I've already talked about that. But this thing is huge online. No one believes what the government's saying. You have a certain percentage that are gone. They're gone for reasons that are, for a variety of different reasons, and you have a percentage that are kind of in limbo. They're trying to figure out what's going on. And you have a handful of pink rabbits. You have a handful of pink rabbits, just a handful. The political correctness officer in every area code. I told you up front, I'm looking for one of you in every area code. That's all it takes to neutralize them, because a vast majority of people agree with us. We're not trying to fight anything. We're not upside down like the red hippopotamus. We're not going backwards. We're trying to do white and normal. And you're pointing out some objective truths over and over again, like anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white, but we're not fighting anything. We're going with the flow. We're not fighting. I call this stage pushing through marshmallow. What you've been on, you've been running around with a mantra, you've been throwing a crowbar. Basically, you have these little crowbars, monkey wrenches, and everything else. You got a big pink rabbit riding around in every area code. He's got a big pink bicycle with big pink spoke wheels, and you're throwing that monkey wrench into the spoke wheels, and he's flipping over the handlebars. Yeah, no warning. The red hippopotamus, no one up top called him and warned him that you were out there. And you just keep throwing these crowbars and monkey wrenches and tire irons and flipping them off his bicycle. He don't like it. It's not fun. Yelling racism and having everyone get out of your way and riding your bike wherever you want to go is very fun. Having someone yell back anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white and flipping you off the handlebars hurts. It's no fun anymore. They're not used to that. They're very, very programmed rabbits. and it is rather comedy to see this. But once he's out of the way, once you start neutralizing him, once he's on the defensive, once he's trying to argue he's not anti-white, you're pushing marshmallow. Because the rest of the society does not disagree with you. You have very little, there's only one in every party, there's only a handful out there that's going to disagree with the logic or disagree with the particular message, because the message is short, it is sweet, and it is geared for white rabbits. We're not doing anything unnatural. But no one's going to really disagree with our dictating or imposing terminology. Every day I get emails of people saying, look, I was at the restaurant and I did the mantra, or I did some version of it, or I just said anti-racism, anti-white, and they were all agreeing with me. All this is happening all the time. There's only one disagreement, that little pink rabbit, and you can flip him off the handlebars time and time again. It's kind of like looking at we're near Eastern and Western civilization, of course, in America especially, you have these chocolate-covered marshmallow rabbits. Chocolate-covered marshmallow rabbits. And the outside is chocolate and it's a little hard. The inside is white and gooey. It's white and fluffy. But once you, this is like a pink chocolate rabbit. You bust through the pink chocolate. And once you're busting through the pink chocolate, you realize there's nothing but marshmallow inside. It's all soft and gooey. Yeah, it's a demoralized society. You can push right through it. We see this with Islam in Europe. It's totally backwards from anything we would ever develop for ourselves. We would never design or want to be under Sharia or anything like that. Only a minority would ever would be. That's why what Western civilization would have been Islamic long ago. But they are basically walking in and pushing marshmallow right away. They overwhelmed the Jews, and the Jews were neutralized to them too. Why? Because they're brown, they're more beholden to the truth. See, the problem with a demoralized society is you can drink your own Kool-Aid. The problem with trying to subvert society, especially for someone like the pink rabbits or the Jew rabbits, especially, is that you can drink your own Kool-Aid. They didn't think they were a threat. Well, they're a huge threat. So they didn't even have to break through the pink chocolate. The pink chocolate just melted right in front of them because they couldn't criticize them. They were brown, more beholden to the truth. And so they're pushing through marshmallow. Now, sooner or later, they start pushing up against this awakened core, and their ideals are not white and normal. They're totally backwards from anything what we'd want in Western civilization. So they're getting a whole lot of flack all of a sudden. But that's to be expected. But the reason they're successful is because the society was already demoralized to begin with. The society had already been subverted. The society had already been neutralized. So much so that the Jews couldn't fight it because they were neutralized themselves. Seriously, you see these arguments among liberal and conservative Jews, that conservative Jews will say, well, Islam's a threat. And the other side would say, no. You know, Muslims can't be Nazis. And, you know, the brown shirts all have brown skin, and they let them all in. Trying to kill us. We've talked about this before, but the key to understanding that is where you're at in the stage of demoralization. You're not going to have demoralization going against you. Most of the efforts within the ranks of the pink rabbits will be undermined among their own ranks. It's done by pink rabbits to other pink rabbits because of a lack of moral standards. This is going on in the greater society as a whole. A pink rabbit doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. That's why he's arguing for the genocide of white rabbits. It doesn't make any sense. He doesn't know the difference between right and wrong, and she doesn't know the difference. So once you point that out, you start undermining it, because they're going to start questioning things eventually too. And any subversive elements within the ranks of pink rabbits, you know, the undercover lover among the ranks, is going to start subverting it too. They won't do it by doing the mantra. They'll do it by asking questions. Well, if we're not pushing anti-racism in Korea or anywhere else in the world, if we're only pushing it in white countries, wouldn't anti-racism just be a code word for anti-white? Why should we be anti-white? They'll ask questions. Very smart subversive elements within the ranks will ask questions. Very smart elements will start pointing out the obvious in very subversive ways just by asking questions. They won't do anything obstructive. They don't do anything immoral. All you have to do is ask questions again and again. And that starts bearing on the conscience of white rabbits. White rabbits always never want to think they're morally out of line. They don't like that. They don't like thinking they're morally out of line. So if someone's telling them that anti-racism is just a code word, that you're really lying. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. You're telling them they're lying. They don't like that. It doesn't feel well, and it's true. It's an objective truth. So that's one factor that will be going for you and not against you. But there's not that many of them out there. Right now there's a mantra video by someone who's trying to take apart the mantra piece by piece, which is an intelligent way to do it if you're going to do it. And it probably has so many thousands of listeners all around the world, and those are all anti-whites, those are all pink rabbits. They're talking to themselves about it, but it's way, way too late, because once you can neutralize them in every area code, once I find you and you go to work, once someone finds me and I find you and you start going to work, and this stuff is out there, there's 60-some podcasts, this is out there, it's going to town. I don't even have to do anything. I could drop off the face of the planet, you're still going to do it. It's like someone handing an auto mechanic a wrench, and he's never seen a wrench before, or she's never seen a wrench before. Well, they're not going back to not using a wrench. Even if the wrench inventor is evil, a mean person, and you know, he's ugly and no one likes him, and he falls off the face of the planet, they're still going to use that wrench because it works. And that's the state you're in now. And it'll grow by natural progression. Now, one of the challenges in this particular deal is that generally crisis would be the last stage, is brought over terminology. It could be brought, this is so wide, it could be brought within groups in Norway, it could be brought within groups in Germany, it could be brought within groups in Austria, it could be brought within political groups, or even, it could be brought within corporate groups. Who knows how broad this could go? But one of the challenges right now is you've got an enemy going for a new world order. That's their strategic objective. And our strategic objective is, of course, to do our part to stop them. And that's what you've been doing, believe it or not. But understanding where you're at in the greater principle of things is always very important, because one of the mistakes conservatives made as good people is they're on college campuses getting hit with better red than dead, dude, better red than dead, and they didn't know what they were up against. They didn't understand the strategic objectives of the enemy. New World Order, oh, that's black helicopter, that's conspiracy type stuff. No, it wasn't. Communists were taking everything over? Yeah, they were, but they weren't doing it with arguing. They were doing it with making their point. Why? Because you're in a subverted society. You're in a society that's already started to be demoralized after World War II. We can't do anything about that. All we can do is try to correct it back to white and normal. That scary ideology. But generally, crisis is brought over terminology. Crisis would be the next stage, would be brought over. It could be in the Republicans, it could be anywhere. And that would be easy to call under normal circumstances. That's a natural progression. Because you're running down a one-way street, they're going to have to argue that they're not anti-white. Pretty difficult to do. They're going to have to argue that it's not genocide, that there's not a double standard. And I'm going to talk about that more in a minute when I talk about victimization and what they're accusing us of. But by and large, you have to understand one thing about your fellow whites in a demoralized society. If you listen to several years ago, a man was put up on Bob's Underground's graduate seminar. His code name in North America was actually Thomas Schumann. That's Thomas, Schumann. His actual name is Yuri Bezmenov. That's Yuri Bezmenov. And I've been asked if I've heard him, and because some of my concepts are straight out of Soviet terminology. And several years ago, someone put him up on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. I'd known about him for a long time. A lot of people have known about him simply because in the early 80s, like 1981, 82, 83, he did a tour around the United States talking about these concepts. America, though, is so far gone that it's coming out. You also have another thing happening in the greater Western civilization. A severely demoralized society will have a total breakdown, a radicalization of human relations. It's one of the reasons why I don't argue. I just make our point. If you argue, you're playing into the radicalization that's already happened. In other words, we are way out of equilibrium. Way out of norm. Even if you think you're in a normal family environment in the middle of Northern Europe and everything's cool and everything seems normal, it seems to die for. It is still not. You are far from normal. There's been a radicalization, and once that radicalization happens, once a society is so deeply demoralized where no one can have a civil conversation without fighting to the death, once you get to the point where, you know, I'll give you a great example of a radicalization or a total breakdown of human relations. In Iceland, there was a famous investor named Jimmy Rogers. That's J-I-M-M-Y-R-O-G-E-R-S, and he did a tour around the world. And back in 2000, see the state of the world. And he's one of George Soros' original partner. Very bright analyst, though. When he first went to Iceland, he noticed that there was a lot of women having babies out of wedlock. My concern at that point was, are they white? Yeah, there are a lot of white babies out of wedlock, but they weren't getting married to have babies. And that was new in Iceland at the time. And he asked the president of Iceland about it at the time on his website, which I think is jimmyrogers.com. And so I'm watching him go around the world at that time, seeing his analysis of various different places. And that type of human, in other words, having a child out of wedlock is not something you're going to see in Western civilization a whole lot. But what you have to understand is that once this process is unleashed, once they start tearing things down to try to get a new world order, you're going to have damaged apples. You're going to have a total breakdown. You're going to have marriage divorce rates through the roof. You're going to have people not getting married to their old age. Most of my friends, most other families that I know of have been divorced. Guys have been divorced. Gals have been divorced. People are raising their nephews. It is total chaos in Western civilization among the average family. Even the average two-parent household with three or four kids or two kids is still having to deal with stuff that they should never have to deal with. I mean, the idea that you should have to worry about a defensive act like growing your own garden because you're afraid of being poisoned. The idea that you should have to worry about moving to a part of the country because someone's trying to kill you. This is very far from equilibrium. But these are all part and partial to a radicalization. Normal civil discussions don't happen, not even between white nationalist groups anymore. It's very difficult for someone to have a civil discussion. It's not necessarily their fault. I'm not blaming the Icelanders. I mean, we're white, and it's ultimately our responsibility. And I'm not one to ever say anyone's to blame for our problems but ourselves. But once you understand what's been done and the spectrum of the situation and the epic media control our enemy has and what they've tried to use it to do, once you understand the plans unleashed, well, you're going to have to be sympathetic that there's going to be some damaged apples. Those damaged apples can come back together pretty quickly because they're still white, but you are far from equilibrium. You are far from normal. And the return to normal in this case will be pretty wild. Pretty wild as they go for that big new world order. And that process has started. I'll go into that in the next podcast again, because we have major news events. Infighting among the pink rabbits has broken out. But this is important to understand where you're at in demoralization. You have a very radicalized society. There's no point in arguing. Just make your point over and over again, because they'll argue to the death. Those that will argue to the death. We have a society so far gone that Europeans usually can sit in a room reading about normal human interaction. Let's say America back in, let's say, the 30s. You could sit in a room and hear other viewpoints and let other viewpoints speak, even if they're radically different than yours, and listen to them and not just be ready to fight to the death. Now that rarely happens, unfortunately. That rarely happens. And that is a sign of radicalization of human relations. If you look at the black, I put up a new website, a link on my site called Detroit is Crap. Why? Because it's true. And there's also another link on there called Diversity is Crap. But if you look at even African behavior compared to the norms, let's say America prior to desegregation, they wouldn't even recognize these Africans. The segregated blacks wouldn't recognize these Africans, and they wouldn't want to be these Africans in America. They look like caricatures. They wouldn't want that. I'm just telling you how far things are gone, and it's across the board. There's no escaping it. Even if you think you can escape it, there is no escaping it. It just doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And you have to have some amount of understanding. So when he was running around Iceland, yelling about Iceland, all these unwed mothers and everything else, the president really didn't know what to do, didn't know how to respond to it. He's just saying, how will this affect society later on? How will this affect financial markets and everything else? Well, really, we don't know. You wouldn't know because nothing like this has ever been unleashed. But the strategic objective is, of course, a new world order. And they don't have that yet. But you're left with the mess, the aftermath, and you have to have some amount of understanding. Sitting there bitching at the Northern Europeans, or we have a tendency to be hard on our other whites because we believe it's all their fault. Oh, you know, they should be doing this, they should be doing that, or they shouldn't be getting divorced so much, or they shouldn't be, it's this problem or that problem, or it's not going to church enough. Everyone's got their own solution. But until you sit back and understand this concept of subversion and demoralization, you're always going to be missing something. And you're always going to be getting upset over something that's actually not their fault. Everyone likes to believe that it's their fault for having the axe murderer. Why? Because whites like to believe horrible things about themselves. Yeah, why do your neighbors think they're racist? Why do your ancestors think they were evil sinners going to burn in hell? We always like to think there's something we've done. It's almost a funny philosophy. You have the white rabbit sitting in a courtroom and apologizing, or actually feeling like they're to blame. It's like a rape victim that thinks she's to blame for the rape. There is a lot of this that goes on in Western civilization, and this stuff goes way back. Way back. You know, whites tend to believe horrible things about themselves, but we have this axe murderer walking around in every area code, this little pink rabbit axe murderer. And our tendency is to blame ourselves for that. And it's true, it's our challenge, and we have to take responsibility for that. But understanding the situation going on, we're not responsible for the axe murderer. We didn't vote on him being there. He's just there, and we're fighting him, trying to figure out what the hell his objective is. And you're dealing with something extremely unnatural to us. so unnatural that most can't believe that they would actually try to genocide us. In fact, even most white nationals have problems believing that, up until recently. Most paleoconservatives have always argued with Bob over that. Well, this isn't actually genocide. We'll just, the society will break down, and us and the Jews and you know, the Anglo elites and whoever else is on their team, we'll all just get along. No. No, you don't understand their strategic objectives, New World Order, and they're not going out like that. It ain't going to work that way. You know, many times the steely-eyed lone wolfer set has always said that you're going to fight to the death. That's 100% correct. You're just not in a conventional type of fight to the death yet. But that is the state of the fact. You're not responsible for the axe murderer. That's really what you got. You got an axe murderer in every area code. That's what we're dealing with here, trying to figure out what he is, how to neutralize him. Well, he's neutralized in this case with the sound, with the vibration. He's neutralized by bringing down the system that supports him. And that is done with an aggressive act. That is done with a subversive act. Whether you like it or not, if you're listening to this podcast on a on my message, on our message, the message for the white rabbits, well, you're doing it. You're doing it. And that's all it takes in this particular type of system. That's what it takes. But it is a whole process. But don't bang your head against the wall against your fellow whites. Have some amount of understanding of what's going on. There's no point. Nothing has power over understanding. There's no point in getting upset over unwed mothers in Iceland. You can't really do anything when something like this is unleashed. When an axe murderer is running around in your area code, you're not the axe murderer. The axe murderer doesn't even believe they're related to us. The axe murderer is just an axe murderer. We didn't vote on him being here. We didn't vote on anything. He's running around putting things in place, and come to find out, we got a sheriff on his side. The sheriff is on his side. Yeah, that's why the axe murderer has been allowed to run loose. Well, they got it. They got an agreement with the sheriff. The sheriff is saying, we like the axe murderer. We got a very unnatural situation. You have to have some amount of understanding of it, but arguing will never work in a society as deeply demoralized as ours. You have to, the only argument that will ever work is always around consistent message. You got to make your point over and over again. It's the way the thing has been designed intentionally. But it is everything to do with our genocide, their New World Order. So I don't really worry about the fits or starts or this angle or that angle, because it always ends up with us being blended with something weird. Who knows what they're going to try to blend us with next or what they're cooking up. But that is my little spiel on demoralization. But this is no longer going to be working against you. Once you throw that tire iron in the pink rabbit wheels, once he starts flipping over the handlebars, once he starts getting bruises on his face, once he starts trying to argue he's not anti-white, it's over with. You're pushing marshmallow. And we're not trying to turn the place into Islamic states. We're not trying to do anything other than have a home, try to bring down the system. We have targeted a system for destruction. We have targeted it for destruction. The system is a politically correct system that says that the disappearances of white rabbits is not an issue. We think it's an issue to be talked about on this planet. Until they let us talk about it, we don't have we don't have anything else to say other than a consistent message. Once they start letting us have meetings and talk about this and start getting some semblance of a normal society, normal white society, well, then we really don't have anything else to talk about. It's just anti-racism. It's just a code word for anti-white. And in the next round, I'm going to do a few Q&As, and I'm going to do 2 weeks from a Bolshevik revolution. I'll be back with you here in a minute after this brief message. And now a word from our sponsor. Have you ever said to yourself, gee, I would love an undercover lover? Or maybe you said to yourself, gee, I would like to be an undercover lover. We know exactly how you feel. For a limited time only, on WhiteRabbitRadio.net, you can buy an undercover lover. You can be an undercover lover. Yes, for only 25 carats. It is a great investment because all the money goes to fight white rabbit genocide, which is the thing we're about here at WhiteRabbitRadio.net. So if you're looking for an undercover lover, or if you're looking to be an undercover lover, or if you're just looking to have the coolest undercover lover in the history of the undercover lovers, we have just the ticket for you, all at a very, very low price. Yeah, so hop on over there and pull up that merchandise tab. And when you see the undercover lover, you'll go wild at how beautiful it is. And hit that buy button. Support fighting white rabbit genocide in the easiest way possible. Be an undercover lover. Now we're going to go into some quick question and answers. The first one is Horace at the front of WhiteRabbitRadio.net. I can't see your little slideshow of all the cartoon images because I use Internet Explorer. Well, Internet Explorer 6, 7, and 8 are kind of cobbled all together. It's not a very good browser. And the website was working with all the browsers. But as of right now, for some days, for some reason, those little slideshows on Internet Explorer 8 will not work. However, if you upgrade, if you're using Windows 7, the newest Windows, you can upgrade to Internet Explorer 9. It works on Internet Explorer 9, and it works on Firefox. It works on Chrome. Everything on the site works on every browser out there, with the exception of the older Internet Explorers. That doesn't mean you can't download anything. You just don't see the little slideshow for some odd reason. And I don't want to go back and re-optimize it just for Internet Explorer 8 or 7 or something like that when they got a new one out. And Internet Explorer 9 is a lot better. Or you can move over to Firefox and you know, there's various different websites that have problems from time to time with the different versions of Internet Explorer. That's why they redid the whole entire thing. Internet Explorer 9 is totally different. But thank you for sending that in. We're well aware of it. It's just getting that little slideshow to work perfectly for a browser that's dated, or that's, you know, when Internet Explorer 9 is already out and it works fine with it, is kind of counterproductive for us. It's kind of counterproductive for us. But thanks for making us aware of it. Yeah, you won't have any problems downloading it, but you won't see the little slideshow necessarily. Some people are, some people aren't. I don't know. But Internet Explorer 9, you can upgrade to it real easy if you're using the latest Windows. And you can upgrade to the latest Firefox or Chrome or whatever, and you'll have no problems. Next question. Next question is in regards to Ameren. Many parties have emailed me asking why they can't post on Ameren or not having American Renaissance posts go through. 50% of the posts are going through that we put on Ameren, and the other 50% are not. That goes to who's running their particular... it could have something to do with the technology behind the website. It could have to do with the person approving comments at the time. But it has nothing to do with all, he dislikes Bob or something along those lines. Now that we're starting to dictate terminology, and you have everyone on Stormfront, all the little white rabbits yelling anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Why the stuff works, they like saying it. It can be quite irritating. There may be someone over there that's not letting that post go through. But it's a 50-50 proposition. Some people are getting posts through, some people aren't. So it's like a coin toss. And I've heard that it could be, you know, they get tons and tons of comments. All these websites get tons of comments. American Renaissance, Ameren.com, Ameren.com is a very big site in so much as they get a lot of traffic. A lot of people trying to comment. You got to go through all the bad comments and everything else. Now on WordPress, that's pretty easy, but they're using an older website, so it may take a little bit longer to approve comments. It may be just technologically related, or the person approving the comments may not like a particular message for whatever reason. It's difficult to say, but it has nothing to do with Jarrett Taylor at all, because he doesn't approve comments. It has nothing to do with Jarrett Taylor and David Duke or Bob. Or anybody, or anything any of you have done. It's just kind of a random thing, because some posts are going through. It's just a 50-50 proposition, and I don't know what more to say about it. I can freak out from time to time if there's a group out there. Obviously, if you can post on CNN, we can post everywhere under the sun our particular message, but yet we can't post on Ameren, and I get a dozen emails. I started asking a lot of questions, but immediately, is there anything I need to know? Because I don't know Jarrett Taylor from anyone else, really. But the answer I got back from Bob was, don't worry about it. It has to do with the post and other things, technologically rated, and Jared doesn't run that, and it has nothing to do with Apple's. But their approach is radically different than ours. You know, it's and Jared has come under fire for that, for being nice to Jews or whatever, you know, taking the approach of ignoring the Jews or working with them or whatever, against calling them out. You know, one approach against the other. There's two types of approaches. One is probably more mainstream, moderate, and Jared Taylor's been around a long time, and I think his philosophy has to do, my understanding has to do with, well, if he came out against the Jews, he would never be on Donahue or anything like that. And that's probably true. It's probably true. But his particular philosophy is a little bit different than, say, yours truly. But that's okay. That's okay. Bob Whitaker's not worried about it, so we're not going to worry about it. If Bob gets worried about it, then you know, he's been calm as a cat over a lot of different stuff of late. But he has a different approach, a different style, but that has nothing to do with our post not going on. It's a 50-50 proposition. Most likely has to do, in my opinion, it has to do with all the comments they get, and who's going to be approving the comments on that day, and how much work they got to do, and how many comments they got to go through. I wouldn't want to have to go through all their comments. Especially under that older website. Under WordPress, it can be a lot of work, even on somewhere like Bugs, going through all the different BS comments and the nasty comments by people who would never get through, all the different spam and everything else. So I don't know what Ameren, I don't know how much of it's just technology. But obviously someone's letting half the posts go through and the other half not. If it was something personal, none of the posts would go through. But you're dictating terminology and you can become quite irritating. Nothing's more irritating than a consistent message. That's the way it works. But it has nothing to do, it's nothing personal. It's nothing personal. Bob has a post coming out on this because parties have wondered what's going on. Why can't we post? I mean, if you can post on CNN, you should be able to post on Ameren. Post on Stormfront, post on CNN, post on White News Now. Post on everywhere, just not Ameren, all the time. All the time. Not on Ameren all the time. We should rephrase that. But it can be rather difficult to post or try to post something if it's just a coin toss. If it's just a coin toss, people generally don't want to post on that website. And that's not good for Ameren, actually. They probably should move to WordPress or something. If they're having problems approving posts simply because there's so many and it's too difficult, you should probably move to a more modern modern website design or whatever. Whatever. I don't know. But it has nothing to do with Jared Taylor personally. That's my understanding of that, and that is the particular thing on spiel on Jared Taylor. But Bob has something coming out on this on his website where he has a statement, because there's been some comments about Jared, for good or ill. I don't know him either way, other than if you know, every single venue on the planet is allowing our comments more or less, except maybe the Republican forums and stuff like that. They'll allow them, then they'll just start taking them down. But if they're allowing our stuff on CNN, they're not allowing it on a white nationalist news website. I'm going to ask questions, obviously, because it doesn't really make sense. But it has nothing to do with apples. And it is a 50-50 proposition. So if you're posting on Ameren, flip a coin. Sometimes it'll go through, sometimes it won't. But posts are going through. They're just not going through at 100%. It doesn't really make any sense. Many other parties have complained about Ameren not being able to post. They have nothing to do with us. It's just, it could be software related. It could be the person behind it approving posts. I'm sure they get dozens upon dozens of hundreds of posts to go through every day. It's I'm sure it's a lot of work. But that's that. Now on to trolls. I've been asked about trolls. I kicked a couple off White News Now. I'm now a moderator. Jamie Kelso made me an honorary moderator on White News Now for kicking off trolls, or for spotting trolls or kicking them off. If someone comes on and they're asking a question on any forum, it seems like a legitimate question, you come back with a legitimate answer. I usually let a post go at least three, or let a particular thread go three or four posts by yours truly to simply feel the person out, simply because if I don't, the Europeans will start screaming that I'm misunderstanding them, and that's true. I'm an American, things are fast, things are big and moving, and there can be a language barrier. But if someone's asking a question, legitimate question, seemingly legitimate, you're answering the question. You're asking other questions to try to see what perspective they have. They're never answering your questions. And they're coming back with more questions, but never answering your questions. Everything seems like a big misunderstanding. Well, this person is misunderstanding me. That's usually what your thoughts are going on. In your mind, you're going on, this person has misunderstood everything. This person doesn't get it. Here, I'll try to help them out. They're not there. If that goes on for more than a few posts, and if it comes to your mind that they're being disingenuous, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. If someone is, it looks like to be intentionally misinterpreting stuff, the straw man, as they call it. Then I'm going to ask them I'm going to accuse them of being disingenuous in the second or post, generally speaking, if it becomes obvious to me. Then in the third post, I'm going to call them a troll rabbit. That's a new term. I've been on White News Now, troll rabbits, and I'm going to ban them on White News Now. On Stormfront, it's very difficult to be a troll. They're going to spot you. They're going to kick you off because they have to deal with it night and day. In fact, they probably are... go overboard when it comes to banning people on certain forums like Stormfront, simply because there's so many trolls. But trolls can wreak havoc down threads. Your question regarding Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. Well, a troll is only going to stir things up for a thread. They're only going to stir me up for three or four posts at most. They're not going to be able to stir anything up because I'm going to call them disingenuous. If they come back and don't say anything after I called them disingenuous, then I'm going to accuse them of being a troll. But on Bugs, we really haven't had a problem with trolls, and they don't even worry about it. There's several different parties registered to post on Bugs that I personally have thought they were trolls. They posted a few times, a handful of months ago, for especially certain European parties and whatnot. I figured they're trolls, but I thought they would come out a year ago if they were going to come out. But there's only one or two threads going on. There's general comments or World War VII going on, as I call it, on Bugs. And then there's only one thread up front. So Bob can spot them a lot faster than anyone and always could on Stormfront simply because he was an interrogator for so long. And I'm not talking about your local police station. He was an actual interrogator at a very high level. He knows a lot about interrogation, which he knows how people are dodging stuff, you know. But if you're asking questions and they're not answering your questions and everything seems like a big misunderstanding after a handful of posts, assume it's a troll and call them out. Don't waste your time on them. That's what they're there for. They're a waste of their time. The biggest reason I don't think we have trolls is, one, the enemy didn't really know anything about us until just recently. You know, right now we've got, you know, certain parties who are pulling apart the mantra and debating it amongst themselves with, you know, so many thousand. They got a few thousand anti-white listeners, whatever, on YouTube. Big deal. Big deal. It's too late for that. Way too late for that type of thing. It just is. We're into the masses. We're into that marshmallow. We're into that white fluff already. We're breaking that pink rabbit chocolate. We're into that fluffy marshmallows, which is where we want to be, because our stuff is just logic. It's common sense. You're going to have a very difficult time explaining how you're anti-white right now, or any time in the future. It isn't going to get easier. But in reality, you know, trolls should have came out a long time ago. I think it has something to do with the black hole. Most of our little bird dog rabbits, our little pink rabbits that run around bird dogging things, most of them are into the black hole, as I call it, the Palestinian-Israeli relations, which heat up several different threads at any given time online all over the world. And our enemy can deploy a great deal of resources against websites like Stormfront, DOS attacks, whatever. They can deploy some amount of resources, but you gotta really go down and figure out how you're going to deploy those resources. And they deployed it, and their trolls and whatnot, in my opinion, online, the vast majority of them against Israeli-Palestinian relations. And that's a black hole. It's a constant fight, and they love to fight. They love tension. They love in their fighting. But they're fighting to the death in a black hole. They can't win it. They can't win it. You can kill them, but you can't win it. You can't win it in forums. You can't troll your way out of the black hole. It's just too many. The Palestinian-Israeli relations is too far gone. And they've lost it. They've lost the public relations. You're not going to troll your way out. You're not going to post your way out. But they deployed resources to that black hole. And also you have that, you know, this internal split between the pink rabbit, banksters and elitesters, which is on fire. It's just on fire. Listen for my next broadcast. I mean, it's right in front of our face. These two sides are starting to go at it at the top of America, which is what I expected to see. But in other words, someone made a decision on our stuff long, long ago, and whatever internal decisions they made to, whatever was agreed to, whatever, they just, you know, the only real response is no response. And so because the people at the top haven't responded, the little pink rabbits are, you know, riding their bicycles around the neighborhood, that analogy I gave. They're riding their pink bicycles with the big tires and the big rims and the big spoked wheels like the old-fashioned bicycle, and we're just lobbing tire irons with the mantra on it in there, and just they're just rolling over the handlebars. It's not fun anymore. It's not fun being accused of being a genocidal freak. It's not fun someone making you look like an idiot all the time. It's not fun flying over the handlebars. But they've been hit and without very little warning. They had no warning at all. Like normally you'd have an ADL, you know, one of their anti-white groups would come out, so-called anti-racist groups would come out with some big piece. They don't say anything. They haven't attacked Bob personally, really. What are you going to attack? Well, most of Bob's files are protected from even the president. That's just the way it works, which is kind of interesting. But I guess they could attack personally. What are you going to attack about me? I'm a white rabbit. Any attack on me would just be a guess. You know, for instance, well, he's not really a white rabbit. Well, very good. Very good. But I mean, you can't really attack it. Most of the attacks will come down two avenues that they try to do. One is victimization. And I'm going to go into that next a little bit. Victimization. But the problem with victimization is it's a very, very difficult for one specific reason. It's not victimization when the Tibetan nomads are tried to force integrate, the Chinese tried to force integrate them in Tibet, and that's ruled ethnic cleansing and genocide. But yet, when there's forced integration in somewhere in California, that makes the news all over every white nationalist website, anyone else looking, major media, that's not considered ethnic cleansing and genocide. You see, there's an applied anti-white double standard. Pointing out anti-white double standards is not victimization. Anyone that's listened to this podcast knows that I don't deal with white victimization. We have all the power. All you got to do, you don't have to. I talked about early in the podcast. I talked about the white tiger on the stage with Siegfried and Roy. Those two little gay boys. Yeah, the white tiger has all the power. He can take them off the stage. He can kill them. All I want you to do is roar a little bit, and you can drag them around the stage just by roaring a little bit. They'll scare right out of your direction. That's what I told you. You're not ever going to be considered a victim by the world. With that being said, pointing out a double standard in regards to ethnic cleansing and genocide as being applied to white rabbits and only white rabbits is not victimization. It's pointing out the obvious. But that's a claim they'll make, and that claim will probably be made probably by some groups internal to white nationalism as well. Maybe they're owned by my enemy, but I won't second guess it. It's probably just a natural reaction. White rabbits tend to blame ourselves. Remember what I told you about the Icelanders? We tend to blame ourselves. We tend to think the worst things about ourselves. You don't believe me? Why do your neighbors think they're evil racist? I mean, they're not racist. They've never done a racist thing in their life. They've never done anything in our history to make us racist. Even under classical definition. And why did our ancestors think they were evil sinners going to burn in hell? We have the tendency to go out of our way to believe horrible things. So thinking that whites deserve it, when we've never voted on any of this stuff. There's never been a vote for anyone to say, okay, they're Democratic Republic, they voted for it, they deserve it. They never voted for any of this. Never voted for that stuff. Never. Never. And when it was tried to push in somewhere like America in 1925, it was thrown down. In 1965, they lied it through. There was never any real vote among the people. Among any white population anywhere. So, I mean, we have a tendency to believe horrible things and to blame the white population, which, and of course, in my opinion, we are always on the hook and to blame simply because we're the ones with the power if we choose to use it. But in reality, there are many things that you just really can't blame them for and stay rational. Once you unleash this stuff, you're going to do a certain amount of damage, as I've already stated, but we have the tendency to believe horrible things about ourselves. So just looking at the man, say, oh, this is victimization. I don't like that. Well, no, it's not. Pointing out anti-white double standards under international law is not victimization. It wasn't victimization when the Kurds hung Saddam Hussein. It was revenge. It's not victimization at all. It's just a lot of people aren't acquainted with the international law. And a second thing that we're already hearing is that they are using a big gap in international law, and they're going to attempt to shove something down our throats. Well, we didn't write the laws. But again, full spectrum practical politics is engaging or taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the laws, but never breaking the law. The law is what it's written, and the law is, some would say it is very broad. I mean, they bring ethnic cleansing charges over whatever. A town, you know, a bunch of people in Libya get run out of a town. They want to bring ethnic cleansing because a bomb's coming too close to houses. They want to bring ethnic cleansing charges against Gaddafi. Well, we can go into debates about that, but that's not our job. Our job is to point out the obvious. The law's there. The law ain't going anywhere. And the law is not being applied to white rabbits and not being applied to Indo-European children and only Indo-European children. Anywhere else, it's called ethnic cleansing and genocide immediately. The forced integration of the nomadic Tibetans into Tibet, oh my goodness. Like, there's a lady in the White House right now, I think it's Sarah Powers. She's married to Cass Sunstein. She's an Irish girl. From Ireland, actually. Moved here when she was a little girl. Moved to America. And she calls ethnic cleansing and genocide all the time. but not against white children. This is a double standard. It has nothing to do with victimization, but there is another thing that we're going to hear, that we're using the law in a broad interpretation, but everyone else does. Everyone interprets the law as it was written. It is written to cover any attempt to wipe out a group. Any. It doesn't differentiate between social engineering and mustard gas. That's not our problem. Our problem is to use the law. Our problem isn't to sit here and say, I've already got emails. Well, you're going to use this to shove things down people's throats and this and that. I don't know. We're simply using it to bring an attention to something. And beyond that, once we're allowed to talk about it in open, and let's face it, right now, white groups are not allowed to even meet in open to talk about our issues, without, you know, hotels banning them and everything else. Like it just happened in the American Renaissance. So until we're allowed to meet and talk about all these issues in public, there's no use in talking about remedies. I've always worried about what my enemies, which are so broad, what they'll do once they realize what these idiots have tried to do. What they'll do. Because they can bring it up no problem if they want to get even. You know, they might jump from the Palestinian issue and start scratching their head and say, wait a minute, what are they saying here? They're saying they actually went on the record with social engineering, and this is, and they'd start reading the law and looking at it. Someone else could jump on it. The Germans, the Russians, someone else could just jump on it. And how wild, the Russians in Africa could bring charges in the UN and just explode. You can do that, but that has nothing to do with us. We're just pointing out double standards. And we're going to hear both ends. We're going to hear it's victimization, or it's they're oppressing us with their interpretation of the genocide laws. Well, you can't have the double standards like you had in Tibet, like you're getting in Libya, like you're getting in Palestine. If you want to have these laws on the books, which they're on the books, they've been enforced already, people have been killed over them. Saddam Hussein was annihilated with these laws. You can't not apply them to a group of children on this country just because they're white. We're pointing that out. And that is blatant. It's overt. It's right in front of everyone's face. Our job with our consistent message is to keep pointing that out, to bring this thing down. And that's a little bit on those particular perspectives, and hopefully I answered those questions fully. But we're going to hear it from both sides, and it'll generally come from within the enemy's camp, or any other white nationalist, paleo-conservative they have on the hook, or that's in their group, you know, undercover pink rabbit lovers. In the next little bit, I'm going to go into an interesting piece, 2 weeks from a Bolshevik revolution. You're going to get into a mindset that's a little bit different mindset than you're used to, but the mindset someone like old Bob Whitaker has, he's had to live with, and some different things like that. But the next piece is called 2 weeks from Bolshevik Revolution. 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik revolution, what would you do if you were 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik revolution? Most people would say, most white rabbit listeners would say, Horace, I'd move. I'd get out of Russia. Oh, but this is going on. This is going to be global. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. You're 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik revolution. What would you do? What if I were to tell you there's a way to monkey wrench it? Would you spend an hour of your time monkey wrenching it? Would you spend all your spare time, any time you could spare, probably even quit your job to spare time, to monkey wrench the Bolshevik Revolution? Well, sure you would. Sure you would. Your priorities would totally change. If any of my listeners could look up the Bolshevik Revolution, or just Google Bolshevik Revolution and the Jew rabbits, you're going to see that it was quite a bloody affair. It's quite a bloody affair. Vast majority of the Bolsheviks on the actual communist hierarchy were, by and large, all little Jew rabbits. It was funded by out of Anglosphere, by and large, London, Washington, New York, that type of thing. Same old, same old. Team Pink Rabbit. Part of it we know about. Part of it, it hasn't been written about extensively enough yet. But there was all kinds of different financiers. One side of the equation, you had National Socialism. The other side of the equation, you had communism. And they were funding both sides. It's a matter of public record. But the Bolshevik Revolution was particularly bloody toward European Christians who happened to be in Russia, the Slavic populations. And I say particularly bloody because I don't know how else to describe it. It was medieval, evil, outrageous. Outrageous in a sense. It was over the top. And what's amazing about it is how little people know about it, outside of maybe some of the different racial communities or paleo conservative communities. because most of the bloody affairs of the Bolshevik Revolution didn't come out till communism came down. Once the Berlin Wall came down, once communism started coming down, these events in total started coming out, how ugly they were, and all of the surrounding events in Poland and everywhere else. But if you thought you were 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik Revolution, what would you do? What would you do? Well, if there was a way to monkey wrench it to postpone it, that's what you do. You'd monkey wrench it. And our particular job on this podcast is quite simple. We take a mantra, we take a monkey wrench, a crowbar, a tire iron that have the word mantra on it, and we throw it into the spokes of those pink rabbits. And those pink rabbits are riding around in every neighborhood, and they're riding around in every zip code, and they got their big pink bicycle, big ugly pink bicycle, and they got these big spoked wheels, and we throw it in their spokes and watch them flip over the handlebars. It's a lot of fun. We're monkey wrenching it. That's our particular little task. But if you were two weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, and someone told you there was a way to monkey wrench it, well, you would spend all your time doing that. If you know anything about the Bolshevik Revolution, if you are white normal, if you're a white rabbit, I mean, your priorities aren't going to be, your normal priorities. Yeah, whatever's going on in your life at that point in time would totally change once you found out you were 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik Revolution and someone needed you to help monkey wrench it, to help stop it, to help postpone it for 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, or indefinitely. You would do your best to stop it. Now, this isn't the type of Bolshevik Revolution where you have a white army and a red army yet. It's not what we're talking about here, but we're talking about stopping the thing from starting to begin with. Well, that's certainly what you would do, because your family, your homeschooling, whatever you got going on, our gardens, none of that really makes sense if someone gets a Bolshevik Revolution going, and it's global. If you have a Bolshevik Revolution that's global to white rabbits, white normal rabbits, none of that would really make sense if you know anything about Bolshevik Revolutions. Your garden doesn't really matter. Your kids don't matter because they're going to be dead. We kind of understand that. So if your analysis is you're 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik Revolution, your normal priority is going to go out the window. Your whole entire worldview that you had before knowing that is going to go out the window. All your different priorities, whether it be spending an extra hour or two with your grandchildren, well, you're not going to spend that extra hour or two with your grandchildren. You're going to be busy monkey wrenching the Bolshevik Revolution, because if they get the Bolshevik Revolution going, you ain't going to have a grandchild. You kind of understand that? That's a particular perspective. I'm going to put up a link, something quite interesting. Put up a link to that I talked about before from the 60s, where you have George Lincoln Rockwell talking at Yale. It's a link to Victory Forever Rockwell. It's a Rockwell link, and you can listen to it for free. Brown University Speech, 1966. And it's a very good speech by someone who's pretty much normal conservative, who happened to call himself a Nazi to get a lot of public attention. And it worked for him at that time, George Lincoln Rockwell. But in 1966, our enemy, during that whole time, post-World War II, 1966 especially, would have been 2 weeks from a Bolshevik Revolution at any given time. Seriously. They had that type of power. And the reason they had that type of power is because no one knew they had that type of power. You can listen to a speech at Brown University. I mean, these aren't idiots in the audience, but they don't have a clue to what's really going on. What's really going on at their universities? What's really going on in the greater society as a whole in regards to demoralization, in regards to subversion, which is demoralization is an epic subversion. But if you listen to it, you realize how clueless they really were. It's not necessarily their fault. I mean, how many of them even heard the term active measures or subversion? But you realize, with George Lincoln Rockwell talking to them, how vulnerable, how in trouble they are. And they were 2 weeks from a Bolshevik Revolution. Our race has spent at the least post-World War II 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik Revolution, especially post-1960, definitely. At any given time, they could try to get one going, and there's been groups monkey-wrenching them all over the globe. I'm always asked why I went out of my way to talk to the Asians. And Asians have played a role in this particular event, especially East Asians, for one particular reason. If you're 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik Revolution, and that Bolshevik Revolution is global, well, if you're an East Asian and you're in the know, well, that includes you too, because you ain't going to survive it. If our race goes, their race will most certainly be done. And so it's incumbent upon them to be part of the team and do whatever it takes to help, and they go out of their way to offer that. And what's interesting now is the bastion of right-wing activities are actually out of East Asia. They're not even, well, there's more conservatives in Russia than there are true conservative organizations in Russia probably than there are in America. And they have more of a conservative mindset because they haven't been so hammered by active measures, they haven't been so subverted. Not that there was an attempt, but they're a lot more normal and white, or allowed to be, than us. But when it comes to the real far-right activities, those are still, by and large, in East Asia, believe it or not. There's certain pockets in places that I've never even talked about. Little island off the coast of China that has always been a bastion for various different intelligence agencies. Not just East Asians, but also white intelligence agencies, European far right activities. Believe it or not, these are things that most of my listeners aren't going to know about. But if you're 2 weeks away from the Bolshevik Revolution, it's going to bring together certain parties who are just trying to survive. Makes sense? It really depends on your analysis. I'm always asked why this stuff is such a priority, or why Bob very intense about this type of stuff. Old Bob Whitaker has lived his whole entire career 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution. And every 2 weeks they got to do something else to monkey wrench it. And every 2 weeks someone else has to do something to monkey wrench it. You know, when I realized this, you're coming into somewhere between 1999 and 2001, I started figuring everything out. By 2003, I think I had a great deal figured out personally. In other words, the stuff that we've been talking about here. Joseph P. Farrell's books make it easier to talk with you about certain things because he has sources. But by 2003, I had certain things figured out. But even by 1999 or 2001, I had figured out that if we were 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, and we've been that way since the 60s, well, someone's done a whole lot to hold them off. So I took a pretty much a bravado attitude that if our race is that clever to hold them off, would they have total power? I mean, from what I saw in 1999, I mean, the Jew Rabbits, Team Pink Rabbit has a lot going on. And by 2003, I knew all about Pink Rabbit Elitesters. I saw that firsthand the hard way. That's another story for another day. But these guys have partners, too. So not only that, they're dealing with a group that wages war by deception, very clever, survived for hundreds of years, very, very clever. Very clever. You have to respect some kind of, you have to respect that type of intensity and that type of single-mindedness, but they're going for a new world order. They're going for a global Bolshevik revolution. They don't have that. If they don't have that in the year 2000, well, then someone's held them off. Then they got problems, because they should have had it in 66. They should have had it when George Lincoln Rockwell gave the speech. I mean, these guys, even if you look at the Mossad, the type of power they had at the time, had way more power than they have now. Now everyone's watching them. They can't even have a, a body shop is a corporation set up by an intelligence agency, like a moving corporation, watching the World Trade Center attack without ending up on Fox News. It's automatically associated with Israel. Mossad can't do anything without being tagged Mossad Israel. Well, you're not very successful when that happens to you. You're no longer successful, but in 1966 they had total power. So by the time I figured it out, I figured they have lots of problems. And if some group was out there, several different groups out there monkey wrenching, well, then I need to go out on my way to help them. It's kind of an attitude to take, isn't it? If you're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, and you figured out that they've held out this Bolshevik Revolution several times for the last 40 years, at a minimum, 40, 50 years, well, you're going to say, well, this group's definitely successful at holding them off. They definitely know our enemy, and I need to do what I need to do to throw the monkey wrench into the pink rabbit as he drives by. I mean, you can't shoot at him. That's illegal. You can't blow up buildings. That doesn't work. None of that stuff works. But there may be a time when we go on an offense and we'll do something pretty unique. And in this type of system, going on offense always involves a consistent message, which is what this podcast is all about. But make no bones about it, right now, on this particular date, on April, this is April 14th, this podcast should be finished, Fall the White Rabbit 65. It has taken 2 weeks to put it together because of many, all these different challenges I've had over the past couple months, various different things. this podcast took a little bit longer to put together, but make no bones about it, you are 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, and they're going for the globe, and they're going to fail. It's going to be an epic fail, but once they go for it, the world is never going to be the same. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So if Bob Whitaker is more concerned with some things than maybe spending an extra 30 minutes with grandchildren, if he's more concerned with some things rather than having a garden, if he's more concerned with some things rather than talking about homeschooling, it's because you're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution. He's lived his whole entire life that way once he figured everything out whenever that was. And all they're doing is throwing monkey wrenches to hold them off. And of course now we're having some fun, we're going on offense and we're watching the pink rabbits fly over their handlebars. It's just funny. It's a fun game. It's a fun game watching the pink rabbits fly over the handlebars, but you know, different dissidents have different pet issues, and all these issues are important. Pet issues are always important. One of my friends always got on my back for not having a garden. Now, mind you, I couldn't have a garden in a big city in a condo. That's where he wanted me to have a garden. He wanted tomato plants in the kitchen. And you know, you got the girlfriend, all ticked off because who wants a big bunch of tomato plants in the kitchen? But you know, obviously he takes things a little too seriously. And of course last year especially, the year before that I tried to have a garden. Last year I had this big garden. I don't know how I did it, but you know, magic dirt, plowed under some grass and everything else. And oh, he's so excited. Dissidents always love it when you take their advice and do what they think is best for the race. And I have no problems with saying that growing a garden is his belief. His belief is growing a garden is the best thing any white rabbit can do for his or her particular family. I have total agreement with that. I'm in total agreement with that. I believe that is true. I think that's sound logic. But it really depends on time priority. If you're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, then spending an extra 10 hours in the garden doesn't really matter. Doesn't really matter. Now, ideally, you want to do all of the above. But sometimes we got to allocate time. Sometimes we got to make choices. And we really maybe shouldn't have to make, but this is a bizarre society we're in. But dissidents love it when you take their advice regarding that or homeschooling or anything else. And a lot of that advice is very sound. But most of that advice, whether it be growing a garden, and the reason he believes that is because he believes the government's trying to poison us. Especially in the United States. In other words, that he's one of these rabbits that believes there's all kinds of additives in the food and they're killing us. That may sound absurd, but if you ever talk to one of these rabbits and they start pointing out to you that we have additives in our food that the Chinese communists don't allow in their food because they think it'll kill them, then you start realizing that he's probably right. I've always believed that the pink rabbits have a manual, a billion ways to kill a white rabbit. And if they don't come up with a new way every month, then they get fired. That's what I believe. So I totally buy into it, and I have no problems with that, saying that that's a very important thing. But if you're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, your priorities are really going to change. You're not going, if your analysis is we're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, everyone's got their own analysis. Every rabbit lives or dies by their own worldview, especially the dissident rabbits. But if you really think you're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, you're going to prepare a little bit differently. A garden is not going to be your main priority. If you have a few extra hours put in a garden, that's wonderful. If you have the time, but a garden is not going to be your main priority. Even homeschooling may not be your priority. Your priority may not even be sending kids to school at all if you're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution. It all comes down to your own analysis. But dissidents, and I always take a lot of care to respect other dissidents' opinions simply because, you know, they go out of their way and they believe what they're saying is best for our particular race, and their worldview is you know, always appreciated. But this particular dissident, his worldview is big in gardening. Nothing wrong with that. He's totally correct on many points. It's just a matter of priorities. And dissidents always love it when you accept their opinion and grow a big garden. And in this case, he loves it. It's fantastic and all this stuff. It's wonderful and it's brilliant. And he's right. It is. But it really comes down to allocating time and what you want to do with your time and how serious of the situation. But if your analysis is you're 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik Revolution, you're going to allocate time differently. You're going to allocate time differently. And that's why someone like Bob Whitaker, that's why we take our particular stuff maybe more serious than, you know, personally I would put more into this podcast than I would say about a garden. I usually put more into helping WhitakerOnline.org historically than other minor things. I don't golf, so that would certainly take the place of golf or something like that because of the seriousness of the situation. But that's just my analysis. that would just be old Bob's analysis, and the rabbit has to live or die by their own analysis. But I'm trying to explain to you why certain priorities, why they might be in, he might be intense over certain priorities, or why I may be intense over certain priorities. Because once they start this, and they've started this process, our enemy has started this process, there's no turning it off or turning it back. Once it goes in the direction they're going to go, and there's a handful of different directions, but once it goes, once once they shut it down, once they get their machine on, once they go with the event that changes the world, that levels the world, that brings the world to a state where there's no going back, and they're close, you're going to understand what we're talking about. And our particular job, of course, is putting out a consistent message about an attempted genocide, about, in this podcast, this white rabbit genocide. So I always go out of my way. I've been asked several times by different commentators on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, how can we get more white nationals, paleo conservatives on a consistent message? I think as time goes on, they're going to see that this is all about genocide. It becomes so obvious. Sometimes you just have to have someone point it out, but it becomes so obvious. My gardening friend, when he first talked about that they were poisoning us with food additives, that sounded ludicrous to me. It sounded like, oh, come on, it's kind of a conspiracy type thing, you know. I mean, okay, granted, there's all kinds of stuff in the food, but do you have any proof of this? He started talking about different additives like aspartame that the Chinese communists will put in their food. He started talking about stuff in stark terms like, all right, this is what the Chinese communists will allow in their food, and this is what the people in Anglosphere, the UK, United Kingdom, especially in America, Australia, allow in our food. And he said the reason they allow this, the Chinese won't allow this, because it'll kill us. It'll kill the Chinese. And so I started looking at it, and I'm like, well, maybe you have something there. But it is an Orwellian conversation. The ideal that I would have to grow a garden to worry about fresh vegetables, other than to save money, the ideal that someone would have to grow a garden worrying about his government killing him with food additives is Orwellian. That is Orwellian. Now, that is a defensive move. The idea that someone would have to worry about homeschooling, which is a legitimate concern, education for a little white rabbit is always a legitimate concern, because the government's trying to brainwash them to death, literally to death, in the public school system. That is Orwellian. Those are defensive acts. Those are defensive acts. Necessary? I believe probably so. You know, some areas of America, the public school system are much better than others. It really depends on your particular worldview. So I don't prejudge it either way. I know some that go to public schools that in the family that have been A-OK. Others have family and extended family, and some have been homeschooling, doing brilliant. It just really depends. But it really depends on your worldview and your priorities. But those are also defensive acts. If you're 2 weeks away from a Bolshevik revolution, no amount of defense is going to matter. You're going to have to go on the offense, either in monkey wrenching something, or in this particular job, there isn't going to be a shooting war in the conventional sense, because they're going to unload next generation technology on everyone's heads. And I'll go into that in a little bit in the next podcast as the enemy starts revealing their hands and the particular direction this could take, and I'll speculate on that. It's important for you to understand even some crazy ideals, because I don't like predicting our race's behavior, or even pink rabbit behaviors, because I've been preparing this stuff for a long time. They got a lot of white rabbits working for them. They're called traitors. It's just a matter of priorities. 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, what are you going to do? Where are you going to put your time? Now, of course, over the past couple of years, I've had a little more time, so I've had gardens, had time to allocate to other things, but it really depends on your allocation of time. In the 70s or in the 80s, when old Bob Whitaker's in Washington, I guarantee you they're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, they're doing whatever it takes to monkey wrench it. Whatever it takes to put it off for another 2 weeks. If the only thing you can do is throw a monkey wrench into the thing, if the only thing you could do at that time is stall it, well, you're going to stall it. It's just common sense. It's common sense. But I don't think our race has, with the exception of maybe some of the steely-eyed lone wolfer types, I don't think our race has any idea of the seriousness of what's been going on. I don't think they do. And that's not necessarily their fault. They're misinformed. They're only as good as the media. They're only as good as the education. They're only as good as their leadership. And the leadership's been out to kill them, obviously, literally. And you're dealing with an enemy that has very, very bizarre traits, very bizarre wants, demands. Even if you look at what's just come out lately, the video I alluded to with Katy Perry, and I'm going to talk about this more, called Extraterrestrial. Just watch the thing. Watch how strange it is. This isn't normal stuff. When you start talking about milks, cows producing human milk, this isn't normal stuff. We don't dream up that stuff. You might get a white scientist working on it just to make the, pay the bills, but that's not nothing we'd normally come up with. Very strange stuff going on. But you are 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution. Our particular job is to throw the crowbar into the spokes of the pink rabbits and watch them flip over the handlebars at the local level. We are on the offense now. We're not on the defense. And if they've held them off this far, we can hold them off again. But that's what this is about. Make no bones about it. In this podcast, I never went out of my ways to scare you to death, but I've told you open-handedly, in the first round, you're going to be terrified. You're going to be terrified. They're going to scare the shit out of you. I hope to get a heads up then on what's coming into play, and I hope to get that slightly beforehand. There's been a big conference, and there's been some things that I found interesting, and I'll go into that in 66, and 66 is going to be out immediately, because there's some important stuff to talk about in case the worst happens or something, in case they go with a handful of particular scenarios they may go with. But you are 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution. And this is global. It's going to bring strange different parties. It's going to bring different parties together. It's going to be rather interesting. But you got one thing going for us. We've held it off. Post World War II, they don't have a new world order. That's why we're still having this conversation. And I never went out of my way to scare you, but I'm just telling you that our race has been in some very, very dangerous positions. We're not quite out of the clouds yet, but if they've held them off that far, I'm guessing this new world order as they go for it will be the epic fail. It'll be the final failure of Team Pink Rabbit. And the area they're going into, the direction they're going, once they cross the Rubicon, and there's big, big events going on in these planets, and they just get bigger. Once they cross the final Rubicon, once they cross that line of demarcation, there's no going back on this planet. And what they've unleashed, they're not going to be able to put back in the bottle, whether it be with white rabbit genocide or any of their big technological things they're going with in the big bamboozle. And the big bamboozle sounds comedic, but in reality, it's just, I don't know how else to describe it. It's a bunch of big vents. It's the Great Deception. It's the Great Deception. But you are 2 weeks away from the Bolshevik Revolution. How will you allocate your time? If that's your analysis, how would you allocate your time? I'm trying to put you into a mindset of some characters that you really don't know all that well, but Bob is going to allocate his time a lot differently than someone who doesn't believe that. I'm going to allocate my time a lot differently than someone who just thinks they can play defense in this particular scenario, and this is just another day, another year, and I'll sit back and I'll isolate myself in the woods, which is cool. I'll grow a big garden, and I'll just let this blow over. Well, you're not going to let a global-wide Bolshevik Revolution blow over. There's no such thing. It's not going to blow over. It's going to blow over your house. It's going to blow down your house. It's going to blow down your family. But that's a mindset. That's kind of common sense. If you think you're 2 weeks away from Bolshevik Revolution, it doesn't really matter if it's global, does it? But we'll talk again on Follow the White Rabbit 66. But I think it's important for you to understand that. We'll continue this conversation. We are now at the end of another episode of Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the Indigenous White Rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horus the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening. So pale.